Interesting relation. Tricia rifled through her portfolio to locate Hoke's business card while Glenn pulled himself together to face the day. After shuffling half a dozen cards, she found the one she was looking for. Kendall. Harvey Oliver Kendall. Hoke. He claimed that he has a cousin living here. She picked up a phone book, hoping to find someone, anyone with the same last name. Hoke's cousin, perhaps? There are three Kendalls in the phone book. She consulted a map to see where each of them lived, hoping that at least one of them was within walking distance of the high school. All the listings belonged to people living outside of city limits, however. She jotted down the numbers so she could call them once she had finished getting ready to visit the sheriff. Perhaps one of the listed Kendalls could direct her. She jumped into the shower just as Glenn was getting out. When she finished, she had a few words with her husband before he went back to Magnolia for his usual Saturday morning visits. "Call Hoke and see what the sheriff here told me is true," Tricia requested. "Text me and let me know what you find out." Glenn promised to have an answer as soon as he was able. "Do you want me to send Greg Fisher over?" he asked on his way out the door. "It's probably not a bad idea," she replied. "Love you." After seeing that her husband was out the door, Tricia started her search for Hoke's cousin. She hit pay dirt on her first call. "Oh, you must be looking for Elsie Kendall," a female voice chirped in Tricia's ear. "I get calls looking for Elsie all the time. She lives in town over near where the old high school was." The old high school? It took Tricia a short moment or two to recall that the old high school was in town, or where the old high school was in town, instead of being just south of the city. "I can give you Elsie Kendall's phone number if you'd like," the woman on the other end of the line told her. Tricia took down the information, writing it down on the back of Hoke's business card. She sat on the new information for a few minutes before deciding to postpone her call to Elsie Kendall until after her visit with Sheriff Hill. Tricia gathered her belongings and checked out of the motel. She was uncertain if she would need to come back, at least immediately. The blustery weather which greeted her while she stowed her suitcase in the trunk of the Mustang helped her decide that tonight, at least, she would try to be in bed cuddled up next to Glenn. She arrived at the sheriff's office, hoping to be offered a fresh cup of coffee and maybe a pastry. Instead, she was met with cold, hard stares. "Sit down over there," a dour deputy guarding the anteroom told Tricia after she announced herself. "Sheriff's out for a bit. He'll be back." She sat, thinking that perhaps she should have accepted the offer of coffee to go from the owner of the motel. Half an hour passed. Tricia watched the clock in the wall behind the deputy count off the minutes while she sat and avoided eye contact with her. "Will he be much longer?" she asked when 45 minutes had elapsed. The deputy ignored her. "Then I suppose I could go get some breakfast or at least a cup of coffee." "No, ma'am," the deputy told her without looking up from whatever papers he seemed to be working on. "My orders were to keep you here until Sheriff Hill came back. If you try to leave, I have orders to place you under arrest." "On what charges?" Tricia demanded. "Accessory to murder." "You're joking, right?" "I never joke, ma'am." The deputy looked up again to reestablish the stare he had cast when she came in the front door. Tricia stared straight back at the deputy, reached into her tote bag, and drew out her phone. Within a minute, she had Greg Fisher on the line. A few minutes after she hung up the phone on the deputy's desk rang. He answered it, and after a few words, he hung up. "You're free to go get breakfast, Miss Knox. Just be back here as soon as you can." The deputy didn't sound very pleased at the turn of events. He growled while giving her permission to leave the building. Tricia wasted no time heading to a cafe she had spotted a block away from the courthouse. It was a crowded little place, filled mostly with the same types of local people she knew from Zeke's Cafe back in Magnolia. She sat down at the counter when was almost immediately greeted by a server bearing a fresh cup and a carafe of coffee. "You were at the dance last night," the server remarked after taking Tricia's breakfast order. "Are you new around here or just visiting?" "Just visiting," Tricia remarked. "I have other business here in town." "Well, you had friends with a group in with Jackson. Are you from Jackson?" "No, I live outside of Prentice with my husband. He runs Zeke's down in Magnolia." The server brightened up. "You're that reporter lady, ain't you?" she beamed. "You working on a story around here?" "I'm investigating something, yes," Tricia confirmed. "What do you know about the murder at the nursing home last night?" Tricia was concerned that word of the murder had gotten out so quickly. Good news travels fast, bad news faster, she thought. The server didn't seem as if she was speaking loudly at all, but even so, Tricia suddenly became aware that many of those at the cafe were gathered around her to catch any pearls of wisdom which might drop from her mouth. "Sheriff Hill came knocking at my door at the motel early this morning, and I presume that he was going to brief me on the situation later this morning." Tricia became wary. She didn't want to stir the pot any more than it had been stirred. If Sheriff Hill was threatening to have her arrested for accessory to a murder, he might take anything she said at the cafe to hold against her. She told the crowd she had no comment and pretended to pay attention to a word puzzle game on her cell phone. Breakfast was filling, but not remarkable. Tricia was finishing her second cup of coffee when Sheriff Hill came through the door, his nostrils flaring with anger. "You get your ass to my office now, Mrs. Michaels," he barked. "I'll have you know that I'm pretty pissed off that you went over my head with Judge Jenkins so you could come here and have your goddamned cup of coffee." The sheriff stormed out, almost slamming the door of the establishment behind him. Tricia took out a $20 bill from her wallet, told her server to keep the change, and left to go back to the courthouse. She arrived to find Sheriff Hill dressing down a deputy who had been sitting in the ante room when Tricia was in earlier. Over in a corner near where Tricia was sitting earlier was a woman in her mid to late 60s, handcuffed to a bench. "Hi," Tricia told the other woman, taking the seat on the bench next to her. "You're the woman the sheriff's going off about, ain't you?" the woman asked. Sheriff Hill was upset that I didn't come and stay when he invited me," Tricia told her. "Maybe that's why I was handcuffed to the bench when I got here," the other woman opined. Tricia introduced herself. "Oh, you're the woman Harvey told me about last night," the woman said. I'm Elsie Kendall, Harvey's mother. I came down to meet him last night. He visits when he can, but the law here doesn't like him so much on account of his father." "Do you mean Quentin Russell?" "Yep." Elsie Russell took a deep breath. "The son of a bitch raped me when I was just 13. Put me in a family way with Harvey and tried to take me to Cincinnati to fix it. My daddy found out what was going to happen and sent me away. I had Harvey and moved in with my parents. They raised him as one of their own. Until he was 16, he knew me as his big sister." "You said that you went to visit Harvey last night." "Yeah, Harvey lets me know ahead of time when he'll be in the area. Usually he'll come with one of his dance clubs." Did you ever get to go and visit him?" "Can't say that I have, Elsie sighed. "Seems like every time I suggest it, he's too busy at work and can't take the time. I think he's too embarrassed. I'm so young, if you ask me." Sheriff Hill had finished dressing down his deputy and approached the women on the bench. "Had enough time to get your story straight?" he demanded. Before either of them could answer, the sheriff released Elsie Kendall from her handcuff and shoved her in the direction of the holding cells. Tricia looked over to see that the desk-bound deputy was standing up and pointing a gun in her general direction. She took it as a sign that if she were to head to the door, she might be shot while trying to escape. The sheriff came back out a few minutes later. He stood in front of Tricia with his hands on his hips. "I hope you understand, young lady, that I have a murder on my hands, and your friend Harvey Kendall is my primary suspect." "So you brought her mother along to hold her as hostage?" "She's a material witness, and so are you," the sheriff snapped. "She's in here on her own protection. That Miss Voorhees, the murder victim, was somehow connected with Quentin Russell, Jr. I'm certain that he would kill his own mother if he had the chance." "I'll wait for my lawyer. Thank you very much." "Then you're waiting in the holding cell until he gets here," Sheriff Hill scowled while he motioned for her to get up. "I hate to have to do this, Mrs. Michaels, but at the moment I have a little choice in the matter. Leave your personal effects with Smitty. I ain't got all day." Tricia did as the sheriff asked. If she was lucky, she could get more of the story about Hoke from his mother while they were in the holding area. Family Ties. Tricia Michaels had been in few jail cells while chasing stories. This one was no worse and no better than most she'd been in. At least it was clean and well lit. Elsie Kendall was in the back corner of the women's holding cell, her eyes darting back and forth, perhaps looking for a possible means of escape. "Welcome to my semi-private room," Elsie told Tricia after the sheriff left him alone. Tricia held up a finger to ask Elsie to be quiet for a few minutes. She scoured the room looking for listening devices, finding one hidden just above the cell door. She pulled it down from its hiding place, showed it to Elsie, and then slid it under the door towards another holding cell. "If we're quiet, we can talk," Tricia told her cellmate. Elsie nodded her head. "Sheriff claims that Miss Voorhees, the woman who was murdered at the nursing home last night, is your granddaughter." "No," Elsie said quietly. "That's a lie. One of Russell's men inside the department told him that was the case. It was a lie. Sheriff bought it." "You know about Russell's men?" "I know about them. I also know that Quentin's not had anything to do with them for over 40 years. Elsie got up from the bench in the cell and started to walk in a circle. "I also know that Quentin's been walking a fine line between the law and the people he used to work for," Elsie continued. "The Ross boys know that Quentin has enough evidence against them to put all of them in jail for life. At the same time, they've caused enough trouble in Quentin's name so that he can't see the light of day, so to speak. It's like a couple of men holding each other by the throat. Both of them's afraid to let go for being fear of choked himself." "Like a Mexican standoff," Tricia observed. "Never heard that one before," Elsie said, shaking her head. "All I know is that I'm caught in the middle. Something bad happens in the county, I'm one of the usual suspects. That's why I call this my semi-private room. I'm in here so often, some of the deputies tell me that they're thinking of naming this cell for me when I'm finally gone. My own little piece of immortality." "It's not an honor I'd like to have." "Who says I like it?" A mischievous smile crossed Elsie's lips. "Now, I have a problem," Tricia told her cellmate. "Who would have reason to kill a woman in a nursing home?" "The one house in Quentin's namesake? I can think of several reasons, but none of them make sense." "Sheriff Hill seems to think that Hoke killed her last night," Tricia stated. "It's highly unlikely. He had no reason to kill her. On the other hand, she was withholding important information to the Ross brothers and Russell's men. When Quentin went underground, he let it be known he had a journal and a box or two of damning evidence against the Ross brothers and some bar owner over in Fuller County. Naturally, the Ross brothers wanted to know where it was hidden in the worst sort of way. And then this fellow shows up," Tricia presumed the next part of the story. "Exactly. The fellow with the Alzheimer's who was picked up in Cincinnati was from somewhere in Indiana. He knew nothing about what was going on here in Ohio. The Ross brothers took him in and set him up in the nursing home, hoping that at some point the man would talk, which he didn't because he didn't know anything. The best I can figure is that one of the new Russell's men thought they might have said something to Miss Voorhees, then tried to make her tell him something that she didn't know." "She's an innocent victim, I take it." "Well, the only reason she's a victim is she bears a resemblance to Quentin and Harvey," Elsie told Tricia. "Harvey was telling me last night that he was afraid for the woman, that if it was found out that the man in the nursing home was found to be dead, one of Russell's men would try to kill her." "Or, from their perspective, Harvey could have had reason to kill her to keep her from revealing where the evidence was hidden," Tricia deduced. "His being in town last night would give someone the chance to pin the murder on him." Their conversation was interrupted by the sound of the outer door of the cell block being opened. Sheriff Hill came in, looking agitated. At some point, during his third or fourth step, Tricia heard a crunch, followed by a loud curse from the sheriff. "This you're doing, you're paying for it," Sheriff Hill admonished Tricia, holding up the remains of the miniature microphone he had just stepped on. "What's this? A listening device?" Tricia feigned surprise at the reason for Sheriff Hill's appearance. "Does the judge know about this?" Sheriff Hill grumbled for a moment before exiting the cell block and locking the door behind him. "I thought the bugging cells was normal," Elsie remarked after the sheriff left. "Bugging cells is in a gray area. I have it on good authority that the judge in this county frowns on it." A few minutes later, Tricia heard Greg Fisher having a loud argument with Sheriff Hill on the other side of the cell block door. He was soon standing outside of her cell, smiling and chuckling at her plight. What you need is a tin cup you can rake across the bars to your cell to get attention of the screws, he laughed. Not funny, Greg. You're making too much noise outside. There's no way I could have been heard. So what's the deal? When do I get out of here, and how the hell did you get here so quickly? Glenn phoned and told me that you might need my help. Besides, I had some unfinished business from yesterday to take care of. As far as your release, the judge is having a talk with the addle-pated sheriff right now, Greg informed her. For some reason, the sheriff is not too happy about letting you go. The judge is even more pissed off about having a Saturday morning interrupted. It has to do with Hoke, Tricia explained. For some reason, Sheriff Hill thinks that Hoke killed a woman at a nursing home last night. He believes if he leaves his mother and me in jail cell, one or the other of us will say something incriminating or that would attract Hoke. You're Hoke's mother? Greg asked, leaning around Tricia to smile at the other occupant in the cell. Now tell me again, just who is Hoke? Hoke is Harvey Oliver Kendall, Tricia told the lawyer. He's the square dance caller from Jackson Glenn and I met a few weeks ago. What exactly is going on here? Greg asked. Elsie and Tricia quickly explained the events of the previous evening, including details about Hoke's clandestine visit with his mother in the high school parking lot during the dance. Why would the sheriff want to put some square dance caller behind bars so badly that he'd put the man's mother in jail? Because Harvey is the illegitimate son of Quentin Russell, that's why, Elsie told him. You're saying that this Hoke is essentially Quentin Russell, Jr.? Exactly. That's what I was trying to tell you when you first came in here, Tricia scolded. Quentin raped me and Harvey was the result, Elsie added. I'll fill you in later, Tricia assured her counselor. Sheriff Hill stomped into the cell block moments later, his face red with anger. Fisher, you and Mrs. Michaels get out of here, he sputtered. She's coming too, Greg told him, pointing to Elsie. Stay out of this one. She's here for her own good. I'm willing to go back to the judge to secure Ms. Kendall's release, Greg pointed out. Fine. Just fine, the sheriff fumed. Within 5 minutes, Tricia, Elsie, and Greg were on their way to Elsie's, a simple home in a quiet neighborhood 2 blocks off the main highway. They arrived to find the obvious stares of the neighbors. The front door showed signs of a forced entry earlier that morning. Inside were signs of a struggle. Elsie immediately set to work on getting the house and her life back in order. You put up a good fight. Good for you, Tricia remarked while helping Elsie bring order to the chaos. Actually, I didn't. The sheriff's men must have done this after taking me to jail. Were they looking for something? Greg asked while putting books back where they belonged. They looked, but they couldn't find what they were after. What was that? Greg asked. Quentin's journals, Elsie told him. When Harvey was born, Quentin grew tired of the business of bullying people. He decided to turn the tables. While I was raising his son, he started stealing from the very people he was working for. He sent most of the money he took directly to me to help raise Harvey. You said you were raped, Tricia interrupted. My rape was a technicality. They said it was rape on account of I was only 13 when we... Well, you know. Truth was that we fell in love with each other. Daddy disapproved at first, but when the money started coming in, he started singing a different tune. We kept up appearances for Harvey's sake and for Quentin's sake. About the time Harvey started to school, Quentin started bringing me his journals. He told me that if anything ever happened to him, or if I was arrested, or if he was arrested, I was to turn the journals over to the law. For about 20 years, Quentin sent me his journals on a regular basis. I never read them. I figured they was none of my business, even after Hoke ran off with his daddy when he turned 16. I only found out about the business when he was in after I got married to Kenny Chambers. Quentin showed up a year or so after the wedding and had a long talk with Kenny and me. He told us what he'd done and what he was doing. In the end, he collected all the papers he'd been sending me and took them off somewheres. You don't have the journals, do you? Greg asked to clarify what Elsie was saying. No, they're with him. Hoke has copies, but the originals are with him. Do you know where Quentin is these days? Tricia asked. Somewhere close. I don't know where. Quentin said it'd be safer for me that way. What happened to Kenny? Kenny got the cancer and passed 5 years ago, God rest his soul, Elsie replied, looking up at the ceiling. I love the man, except for telling Sheriff Hill about my connection with Quentin. I've had trouble with the sheriff ever since. You see, the sheriff vowed revenge on Quentin and Harvey for what's supposed to be in the journals. The sheriff's sister disappeared into one of the houses run by the people Quentin once worked for when she was only 12. She turned up dead from a botched abortion just before her 15th birthday. Quentin was dealing with white slavery, Greg asked. Elsie nodded. They were deeply involved, along with at least a dozen county sheriffs stretching from Marietta to Cincinnati. They took girls who wouldn't be missed. Some of them ended up in the houses along the river. Some of them were sold to older men and forced to be wives and mothers. A lot of them ended up dead, like Raylene Hill. It was nasty business, but it made them a lot of money. I take it that if Sheriff Hill ever got hold of the journals, he'd bring down quite a few people, wouldn't he? Tricia asked. Some of them are still living, and in pretty high places, Elsie agreed. Well, how did the sheriff find out about the journals, Greg asked. Word was that the journals came out about the time Quentin went into hiding. They was his insurance policy. As long as they existed, he had something to hold over the others' heads. If they got out, everyone knowed that heads would roll. And he knew that you had them at one time? Well, no, not at first. About 2 years ago, he started coming around and asked me if I knew anything about the journals and where he might find Harvey. He knew about the connection between me and Quentin and Harvey, cause of Kenny. I wish I'd never heard of Quentin or the journals. My life has been a mess. Maybe it's time for a new start, Greg suggested. Maybe it's time to put this all behind you and start over again.